Let me introduce our next speaker is John Kim Cook. He is a government and nonprofit consultant, currently president and CEO of Cook Strategies, LLC. He serves as vice president of the board of directors for the National Disaster of Interface Networks, also on the advisory board of the Institute for Church Safety and Risk Management. John has served for 8 years as a political appointee in the George W. Bush administration, most recently serving as the director of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Center of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. John resides in Virginia with his wife and 2 sons. So, John, we welcome you.
I was reading this morning, and you know how you ever open the Bible and you're like, I'm going to read a psalm or something, and something just kind of hits you like, wow, this is apropos, isn't it? I mean, for the day. And so I was looking and turned to Psalm 94, and I think it was really something that would be helpful for us as I speak for a few minutes about just partnering with government. I'll give you a little bit, maybe a story or two, because everybody has to tell a story around here. And I don't have videos, but I do have a PowerPoint. I'll read this scripture from Psalm 94. The scripture says, Lord knows the thoughts of man, he knows that they are futile. Blessed is the man you discipline, O the Lord, the man you teach from your law. You grant him relief from days of trouble till a pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not reject his people. He will never forsake his inheritance. Judgment will be again be founded on righteousness, and all the upright in heart will follow it. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will take a stand for me against evildoers? Unless the Lord had given help, I would soon have dwelt in the silence of death. When I said, my foot is slipping, your love, O Lord, supported me. When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought joy to my soul. As security people, I think that's really helpful to us to know that when our anxiety, we get overflow with just this anxiety and adrenaline, then, you know, my foot is slipping. Your love, O Lord, supported me. Anxiety was great within me. Your consolation brought joy to my soul. Then it goes on to say, they band together, talking about the wicked, against the righteous and condemn the innocent to death. But the Lord has become my fortress and my God, the rock in whom I take refuge. He will repay them for their sins and destroy them for their wickedness. The Lord our God will destroy them. But the Lord has become my fortress. So I just thought that was something to keep in mind, and it's a good word picture for you as well. Thanks so much, Jeff, Joe, Bob, Brian. Thank you for your great hospitality here at Southern Seminary, and thank you for inviting me to speak to such a really talented group and just great experts we have here. I think this is just the first of many conferences like this, and I appreciate Southern Seminary for hosting. I'd like to thank these guys and their colleagues here at Southern, everything from the food to the security, you know, everything that they've provided for us here, the technical expertise on the sound and the pictures and everything. I'd just like to ask you all to give a round of applause to our folks here at Southern for their hospitality and their great, you know. And for Brian and advising from his special expertise there in the D.C. area. We had met a few months back and just had a great time at lunch together, and we're talking about this conference and other things we can partner on and work together, and it's really excited that God's brought such people together. I know that here you've probably met some people and networked with people that you just have had no idea what kind of great benefits that will have for all of you as you work together. You know, as the Bible says, a strand of two or three, you know, it's not going to be broken. And if you are able to work together on this issue, I think that you'll find so much just being able to put things together, so much that will be helpful to all of you and the people in your congregation, your organization. many, I know the other day some of the folks and the security folks were being introduced, and I just want to say thanks to our military as well. How many of you have served in the military in here today? If you'll raise your hand. And I just want to thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. I'm going to, we're going to have some giveaways. I say, well, everybody's giving books away. And so I brought one of my wife's books. She's an author, and you can find those on janecook.com. And we'll let Brian or maybe Jeff give something away in a little bit. I've got this, which is Battlefields and Blessings, Stories of Faith and Courage from Iraq and Afghanistan. And then she also did one part of the series, and this happens to be in the bookstore down there as well, but I can't sign it for her, unfortunately. We're close, but not able to do the signatures. Battlefields and Blessings has several in the series. They've even done one on, which is kind of a unique and indirect link to firefighters. And so they're talking about kind of the travails of being out there in harm's way. And so that's, and they're just continuing with this series. They've got one on the World War II. They've got one on the Civil War. She wrote one on the Revolutionary War, and was able to talk about that on the Glenn Beck Show a few weeks ago, right before July 4th, which was really neat, on Founders Fridays. And he talks about the founding of our country and the Christian heritage behind that. So I'll stop with the advertisements. So I do want to say I will give these away, too. This is just something that I've kept from my great experience that I was able to have, and the Lord was able to provide me with the opportunity to work with the faith-based initiative across the government. And this is the White House final report from December of 2008, Innovations in Compassion, the Faith-Based and Community Initiative, a final report to the Armies of Compassion, which is what President Bush used to call the Armies of Compassion, and talk about how he felt like they made such a difference in people's lives. So, it's also, one of the things here at Southern Seminary I was going to mention as I go through some of the things that you may want to take from this. If you're an academic institution, you think about church security, you know, what could we do to develop this as a curriculum? And I worked in higher education for a while, and I know that Homeland Security curriculum, how many of you had heard about Homeland Security before 9/11? Really wasn't a part of our daily discussions, was it? So Homeland Security curriculum has come a long way. We've done some really neat things at a lot of universities. Seminaries are touching on it, everything. And so it used to be, you know, criminal justice, but we've moved in this Homeland Security curriculum, and I really think that this is something we ought to think about in the future. I was telling Jeff the other day, you know, this would be a good thing for Southern or, you know, other universities. Secular universities talk about house of worship security because it's something across, you know, whatever faith people happen to be. If you're in a synagogue, of course, and they've been doing this a long time, and they have a great knowledge base that they can share as well, and we can learn from in the Christian community. So it's kind of new to us. You know, here in Louisville, I was thinking about Louisville and coming up, and I was like, oh, I used to work for Secretary Elaine Chao, and she's from this area, and have a funny story, you know, to tell. I was going to, kind of a funny story. It was on 9/11, which you try to, Secretary Chao and others tried to kind of get us in a light mood after that. And some of us were running out to the mall, National Mall, and everybody was telling these stories and these rumors you heard on TV and after the Pentagon was hit, I was trying to find my wife. She was working over at White House old executive, or Eisenhower executive office building. I was working at the Department of Labor, which is right across from Caddy Corner to the Capitol. And it was a little bit, it was very scary, it was surreal, and you think about that day, and could you have been hurt or could you have been hit? And we had friends later we would hear from in the Pentagon that they just had a near miss, that they went to get coffee, or, you know, there's just all kinds of things that you hear about because it was hit in that one sector of the Pentagon. We were in a staff meeting, and all of a sudden we heard the World Trade Center was hit. And then right as we were going to the staff meeting, we were in the staff meeting for a little bit, and they said, came in as we were starting and said, the second plane hit the tower, World Trade Center. And so we were thinking, well, I guess we go ahead and have our staff meeting. I'm not sure. And we had a little staff meeting there, and a few minutes later, and I don't know what happened in the staff meeting because nobody could remember what happened after this, but they said a lady in the office said the Pentagon had been hit, and she had a brother working over at the Pentagon. And so all of a sudden, we started to evacuate the building and so forth. And then we were running out to the National Mall, and they said, oh, the State Department, there's a bomb in front of the State Department. Somebody on CNN or something said something that was not true, but there were just a lot of rumors flying. And then somebody said, oh, the National Mall's on fire. National Mall's grass. Yeah, well, it's a lot of dirt, really. So they had seen these illusions across the mall and across town, and it started to just exaggerate things in their mind or whatever. And so we ran out the mall. Well, it wasn't on fire. Thankfully, we were standing out there wondering where to go from here. There really wasn't a good evacuation plan. We weren't really prepped on what to do first, what to do next. My wife was over at the White House. Brian will appreciate this. Over at the EEOB, and the Secret Service guy said, take off your shoes and run, the ladies. And so they were running, she took off her heels, and she was running down the street. And but run where? So she got in a cab, sat in the cab for a while as the traffic just kind of ground to a halt. And she made it across town eventually back into near Alexandria, Virginia, where we lived at the time. And it was several hours later, and over an hour later before we could get a hold of each other on our cell phones. But Secretary Chao, the Sanders from this area, and Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell's her husband, and somebody got a hold of her, and she said, oh, y'all come over to the house. So a group of us went over to her house there, a small house on Capitol Hill where they stay when they're in the area. And we ordered Domino's pizza, and we were calling all the people for Elaine Chao, saying, well, your assistant secretaries, undersecretaries, she said, what we need to do is call them when we could get through on our cell phone to find out if they actually had gotten everybody evacuated, everybody was safe, and so forth. And so we did that, and then finally about 3:30 that afternoon, I got home. And when I went home, all the streets were closed down. There were National Guard on the corners, and they would look at you as you went by. And it was just really like a police state. It was like a surreal experience, something you see on some apocalyptic movie or whatever. And so, but Secretary Chao really had the good frame of mind. I remember we were using her landline because our cell phones were not working well, of course, and they were jammed. So I was on the phone with my sister-in-law telling her, please call my other family members, tell them we're okay, yada, yada. And she did that. She started to call and was getting off the phone. And Senator McConnell's chief of staff called and said, I need to speak with the senator. He was upstairs. And so, it was just a real surreal thing. And I think one of the things that, we learned so many things from 9/11. One of the things that we learned, we had people who had disabilities, various disabilities, in the buildings. And they didn't know how to egress the building. If you were in a wheelchair, do you go into an elevator? You always told, oh, close down the elevator, turn off the elevators. There are all kinds of questions that came up. People who were deaf who did not necessarily hear the alarm going off. And then eventually there were really neat protocols in place after a year or two that we had that were able to, which I think they put in place a lot of, like Louisville as we were visiting yesterday and going around and touring a facility, seeing the security protocols and the emergency protocols that have been put in place. It's really amazing how far we've come. But there were just so many things we learned. In fact, there was a book developed, and I don't have it with me, but if you want to get that, if you have a large facility, you can go online and find it. But the federal government, the Department of Labor, developed, when I was over at Department of Labor, a booklet on buildings, and it was really starting with federal buildings, but buildings evacuation and dealing with people with disabilities and how to set up all the different types of scenarios ahead of time so that you can think about and think through those situations and be ready for the inevitable to occur or the disaster or whatever type of emergency that you have. Could be a snow emergency. We've dealt with that in Washington a little bit, which has been a little bit of a dry run for something else, but we had a lot of federal employees that were stuck at home. And fortunately, a lot of them have been able to work now through their laptop or their PC at home and get into their systems. But then the IT security guys go, well, you're using your personal PC, and there's, you know, all these questions that come up. So they've developed some really unique some firewalls and things. A lot of those lessons were eye-opening. And this was the first time that many of us had really dealt with those issues. So I thought that it would be good to talk a little bit about, as we think about church security. I was telling a story to my Bible stories at night, read them to my 3-year-old, 5-year-old boys, and I was thinking about for some reason, just came to mind the parable of the lost sheep, and I was thinking, you know, as a security guy, what does that have to do with anything? But it really does, because when you think about how Jesus really cared for every sheep, every little lamb of the flock, and as a security person, you're thinking about safety and security and thinking about your church and your building and the people involved. You don't want anybody to get lost. You don't want anybody to not be a part of your planning. And it's really important to think about every group. And that's one of the things we were talking about with disability, is to think about every group and what would be the very worst case scenario we've talked about here with those groups of people. And then plan ahead and write those things down and have them not just on the shelf collecting dust, but have those emergency plans available and retrain, re-exercise over and over and over. And we've done that in the federal government to a certain extent. I think that it needs to be improved even more, but we did develop there was an exercise program that we would do. We would exercise over and over. And military people are used to this. They've done it before. Of course, a lot of security and police and fire EMS had done it, but just thinking about federal employees, that was just something that had not come to mind in a long time. So really before the Cold War era and all that. So many of you have cared for your flock, and you didn't even know it, but you thought you were just doing your job and fulfilling a commitment, pleasing the pastor or whatever, but just remember that you're caring for that flock, and that one person, that one sheep, that gets lost, and not necessarily lost, but maybe just lost in the shuffle of all this planning, that you think about them and the scenario they may go through, and then be able, when that time comes, to account for everybody. That's one of the things that we do when we do the drills, is take a roll. You know, just like when I was in elementary school, I think we did that for tornado alerts or something in East Texas where I grew up. And so just think about all those things ahead of time, because that one lost sheep may have been that guy that, you know, Ron Aguiar was talking about last night, the policeman he ended up baptizing. Could be the other person that looked like an undesirable person that came in the door that may have come to Christ. So it's just a lot of things that we need to think about ahead of time. My wife and I were blessed to serve under President Bush, and not that I knew him well, but served under him while he was governor, actually, for a little while. And so we worked with him and his other staff for about a decade between the two of us. So at this point, I'll share a couple of highlights for you of the Faith-Based Initiative, which is continuing at this point, and we're excited to see that, and we hope that it will continue for a long time. So briefly sharing the journey of the initiative under 8 years, and I showed you the book there. I worked at Department of Homeland Security and FEMA. We were primarily working with FEMA because we were created under a post-Katrina scenario. We were thinking about, people were thinking about how would we work with those faith-based organizations. Like often it's Compassion International you hear, Samaritan's Purse and other great groups like you, Billy Graham, Evangelical Association, Southern Baptist, of course, do a lot of disaster release. If we saw last night with Bob, and I've worked with them before, wonderful. Groups out there, faith-based organizations that work so hard and have so much to offer the communities during some sort of emergency or disaster, but yet the government just does a lousy job of trying to coordinate with them. And there's a fine line, because those groups don't want too much coordination, too much control. Obviously, they want to be autonomous and independent, but it's a fine balance. There are a lot of protocols and frameworks and instant management systems that have been put in place to try to make that happen in the right way. And there's still, it's a work in progress. But that was one thing that they saw, that you know, was really an issue. It was working with faith-based groups, and not just faith-based, but secular nonprofits and NGOs as well. President Bush once said, "I love being with people of the members of the armies of compassion, foot soldiers in helping make America a more hopeful place. Every day you mend broken hearts with love, you mend broken lives with hope, and mend broken communities with countless acts of extraordinary kindness. Putting hope in people's hearts is the mission of our nation's faith-based and community groups." He said, groups like yours have harnessed a power that no government bureaucracy can match. If your organization puts medicine in people's hands, food in people's mouths, or a roof over their heads, then you're succeeding. And for the sake of our country, the government ought to support your work. So it was the whole idea of supporting, coming alongside these organizations. He said, it's changed people's lives, and it's amazing what happens when one soul who decides to do something changes a heart. It's likely that heart has been changed, that it's willing to change another heart, and it's that effect that will have an incredibly profound impact on all of us. So he had this vision to create this faith-based and community initiatives to come alongside these faith-based and community organizations across the country, and even internationally, many international USAID working with them as well. And they developed a faith-based community initiatives office before we did it at the Department of Homeland Security. But there's a number of things that are just amazing programs, AIDS relief and malaria and other, which have made a huge, huge difference in people's lives. But the idea is these Christian organizations and other faiths as well and nonprofits are already doing great work. Let's come alongside them. One example he saw was Victory Fellowship in San Antonio. It was just this outreach that had amazing effect on people who were addicted to drugs, who had been longtime prisoners, and the recidivism rate, never can say the word right, just went way down after they got them in there. They didn't push anything too hard, but they worked with them on their physical issues and their mental issues, but they shared the love of Christ, and they just showed them how He was the hands and feet to these people. And so they were instrumental in having an impression on President Bush and on his heart to make a difference in the future and change the way government looks at these organizations. And I think there has been a huge impact. President Obama has continued that effort, and you know, we'll continue to monitor their groups that monitor that all the time. Some nonprofits and people who worked in the faith-based initiative over the last 8 or 9 years, who are out there doing these things as kind of think tanks and consultants to look at those. So, just wanted to share a little bit about that. And then there's a huge amount of work that's done on whether it's global health or community health services, homelessness. The president had a prisoner reentry initiative, disadvantaged students in education, access to recovery program, which helps recovering addicts with vouchers and enable them to choose from a network of faith-based and community organizations for clinical and support services that met their needs. And thousands of these organizations helped produce just wonderful results. So that's some of the things. And then at Homeland Security and FEMA, as I mentioned, we really work to address those issues as well. At that Department of Homeland Security where I served, this center was established back in around 2006, and my predecessor had come up with the idea. He had been a deputy director over at HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and he had seen how Katrina, again, just working with these faith-based groups, there were a lot of studies and research and interviews going on with people that were down there on the Gulf Coast. As you know, you saw it on the media. But so that was part of the lessons learned that we came up with. Now, there were other studies that were done later. There was something by Homeland Security Institute that was sanctioned by Homeland Security, and it was a research and development arm of DHS, and they said, go down there and find out what people are doing. What are these faith-based groups specifically? Is the role of faith-based and community organizations during disaster and the value of those organizations? And so I don't have any of those reports either, but you can find them online, called Heralding Unheard Voices. And so what they found was these faith-based organizations and NGOs had a significant impact during Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. They went in and interviewed hundreds of people, many by phone and many in person, spent several months down there. The scale of response was unprecedented. In many communities, they were the sole and lead provider of services for days and weeks. They made life and death differences in people's lives. They gave food to the hungry and vulnerable. They reduced suffering, facilitated restoration of infrastructure, and lessened the economic impact of the hurricanes by donating services and material resources. Now think about all those things. Economy? How could they help the economy? Well, faith-based organizations are there donating food and their time and they're giving to people in need where the local resources are so stretched and they can't handle all that. And so to bring in these people, it's awesome to see. And I appreciate those of you, Bob and others, who have been involved in relief efforts. If we have some type of disaster in the area where you live, where your church is, that's one of the things that we need to do. One of the opportunities I've had over the last year has been to lead an organization, a ministry within our church that is called Eye of the Storm, and we work with disaster relief but also emergency preparedness issues. And we're thinking about, we have a mega church, 15,000-16,000 on any given week. Think about, how are we going to prepare those people? I mean, if we prepare a certain percentage of those people, that will be a lot. Just to prepare individuals and families of, you know, what kind of food and water do you need to survive as a family if you end up sheltering in place, for instance? How do you handle fire emergencies? And you've talked about those things before with your family, but it's something to review and think about again and replenish those supplies. And many of us haven't done that since about Y2K. Before Y2K, we were thinking, well, how are we going to, you know, bone up all these supplies? And then 9/11 happened, and people started, you know, Secretary Ridge at the time said to buy some duct tape, and so people were buying that, and which is good to have. It really is, and can be helpful. But at the time, again, we were all kind of struck by this. I think one of the things that organizations like these FPOs and NGOs, we would call them, in those disaster areas can do is can help support those other services that are available, but often become the front line first responders, if you will, in that area of providing for human needs. So that may be something you want to think about in your organization is, how are we going to handle some kind of disaster in this region? And is our church going to be able to be a help for those people? Do we have a big sanctuary, big fellowship hall, whatever, where we could keep people? Maybe we could put cots down. Maybe we could keep in storage some supplies for those people who happen to have their home is a disaster area. They're not able to be there. They have to leave their home for whatever reason. And so this research by Homeland Security Institute, there's also research on community resilience is another term that's kind of come in the last few years. And one of the things that they've learned about community resilience is, resilience is basically the ability to bounce back, resilience of a community being able to come back quickly. There's some communities that you've seen that are very good at that and some that are not. Some very good examples they found in Charleston, South Carolina, at Hurricane Hugo. Anybody here from Charleston? No. But South Carolina, anyway, South Carolina? Oh, there we go. South Carolinians. Did you experience Hurricane Hugo in 1990, I believe? Yeah. And they've been very young. So, 89, sorry. Hurricane Hugo came through, and they learned over time to develop some things that were very good protocols. And I've been there to a few conferences and things, spoken with community leaders, and I really was impressed with their resilience. It's easy to get complacent after you haven't had anything for a while. So just begin to think of those things as you develop your emergency plans. Not only think about your flock and your congregation, but think about the broader, the community. And you can really have an outreach, an impact on those people, and in a right way, in a tactful way, at the right time, you may have an opportunity to share Christ with them. So, as a result of these studies, and there were other things done in government over the 2006-07, there was a national strategy for Homeland Security, and it specifically talked about these armies of compassion, these faith-based and community organizations. It says, because the nonprofit sector, including volunteer and relief groups and faith-based organizations, provides important support for the nation, including meals and shelter, counseling, compassion, and comfort to Americans, particularly in the aftermath of an incident, the National Response Plan, which is now the National Response Framework, and you can find that online, the NRF, and accompany plans, according to the National Strategy for Homeland Security. It said all these plans must be guided by, closely guided by, at their core, the citizens, the private sector, faith-based and community organizations that are most severely and directly affected. And it continued, said, we encourage the preparedness of other Homeland Security stakeholders, including private sector and nonprofit groups, such as non-governmental organizations and faith-based groups, and whenever appropriate, incorporate them as full partners into our national preparedness efforts across all Homeland Security disciplines. So I thought that was a big step back in 2006 and 2007, putting out that Homeland Security National Strategy to say these organizations, as part of that strategy, need to be full partners. And sometimes I see that. I see that in some great states. You know, other states just haven't gotten there yet and need a little encouragement, and so you may decide to get involved at that level, your emergency managers, and talk to them about it. But you need to be full partners. If you're an organization, a key organization in that area that will provide relief, talk to them. The current FEMA director, or administrator now, they call it, Craig Fugate, was the Florida emergency manager for the state of Florida. I met with him back in 2007, and we talked about faith-based organizations and the key role they play. And I thought it was really telling that Craig Fugate just immediately jumped aboard. He said, John, I get it. He said, we've been doing this for a long time in Florida. And he said, and we really believe they should be full partners. And I said, Craig, how can you, you know, what can we do to help spread that message to other people? He said, what do you need me to do? I said, well, what do you think about your emergency managers, your counterparts at with the National Emergency Management Association, NEMA, and IAEM, which is the International Association of Emergency Managers? I said, what about them? Have they really thought about these issues and the faith-based organizations and the key role they play? And he said, most of them really, they don't understand it. They don't get it. And so one of the things we talked about is kind of developing strategies, and it's ongoing, for reaching out to those other emergency managers. And you can do that at your local level as you're having those discussions. And one of the things I'll talk about in a minute is ways to partner at that local and state level with your fire and your EMS and your police and all your local officials. So that after that, the national framework, national response framework, was released in 2008, and the Obama administration has followed with the draft of the national recovery framework. So it's realizing what the different players are in the national, in any recovery that you have, and how are you going to address those issues. And of course, NGOs and faith-based organizations are still a part of that private sector, and they're looking at that as a draft to finalize it as well. So how do you become full partners? I'll tell you a little bit about some available resources. Anybody familiar with ready.gov? Ready.gov has a variety of resources that prepares people for emergency situations. And so ready.gov is a partner that you need to think about. They have key partners across the country that include faith-based organizations. They have, I believe it's monthly calls, at least quarterly, where they reach out to these organizations. We used to participate those. We're in those when they're in the government, sometimes brief partners on that. You don't have to be getting government funding or anything like that. So you're just a partner because they realize that it's important that you're a part of that discussion. So ready.gov, part of a strategy that's been developed over the last few years, and they have a wonderful set of materials on there. And you can download some things on there, and you can actually print it out and put your church's insignia on it, or your organization's down at the bottom, and it can be a partnership, become kind of a partnership with the government. They ran out of funding at some point for these brochures, and they said, well, why don't you just download it? And some people, they said, well, yeah, we can. I mean, it costs a little bit of money. We can get the printer, though, and we can print those out in color and put those things on it. So anyway, this organization, this Center for Faith-Based Community Initiatives was created. We were created by executive order, and so executive orders, if you don't know how those work, you know, they pretty much stay in place, administration to administration. The Center for Faith-Based Community Initiatives was created there as a result, as we said, of Hurricane Katrina, as an opportunity within my organization. I worked not only in preparedness, but in response recovery. I'd go down to situations in where the Hurricane Gustav, Hurricane Ike, and seeing those great organizations down there. Also, working with the California wildfires. You guys from California have talked to some of you about that. And going and helping facilitate those relationships with government and the faith-based organizations that were out there. People were out there. Christ in Action, that's an example, a group that I worked with. They're actually up in Virginia. They were providing thousands of meals a day. Southern Baptists were doing similar and a number of other things, and just setting up tents and having volunteers coming in. And it was just it was so great to see those armies of compassion really in action. And then in Galveston, we went down where 75% of the homes had 4 feet of water, and that kind of got off the news because something political or sensational kind of came up, and so that didn't stay on the news for very long. So here are some partners that you need to think about, and then I need to wrap up in a few minutes. Homeland Security Emergency Management Partners, state, local, fire, EMS, and police, and you know that kind of goes without saying, but it needs to be on your list. I mentioned a curriculum earlier, higher education institutions to think about developing a curriculum. So if you're interested in that issue and you have a lot of expertise to offer, it may be something that you want to do. And I'm happy to work with you if you want to contact me and help from my end, because I do have a higher education background. I have a real interest in that, especially on this issue. CISM, Critical Incident Stress Management. How many of you are CISM trained? Anybody in here has a certificate from the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation? Another ICISF. Maybe something you want to think about, because this is an opportunity to get people ready to deal with a crisis situation. And whatever crisis situation you have in your congregation, CISM trained is a really, really helpful thing. And they have several levels of that. You can go into pastoral care. It's an internationally certified a certificate that you receive, and you're not as much a counselor as going alongside a person and listening. And you all know from pastors and people who have been with people in these situations, you often have an opportunity to counsel eventually, but you just want to listen to them, kind of draw things out of them, and there's a great bed of knowledge there that you can have, and you'll be surprised, like I have. My wife will say, "Are you sisming me?" I'm like, "No, not really." "Are you?" It's like, "Well, what is that?" Well, I'm just talking to her and listening to her, what a bad day she had or whatever, it kind of comes back. But those skills are really, really good to have. So if you have people on your staff, and I would encourage most of your staff, we were talking yesterday, I believe, about having people EMS trained. We were talking about Southern Seminary. It's a great program where they have all these staff in the administration building there trained on, whether it's EMS or AED, life support, first aid, and your normal things, but this is just something to think a little bit out of the box of. So CISM, you can look that up. There are Christian organizations that provide the CISM training as well. I know that Christ in Action is one of them that I've worked with before. A number of them. There's a wonderful teacher that we had. It's from Pittsburgh area, and he was the one of the American Airlines chaplains on 9/11, named Gary Evans, and he just has wonderful stories. He was brought into Columbine, I believe, Virginia Tech, a number of other major emergencies as the chief chaplain there. So it's really developed some chaplaincy skills. And I know that Southern Baptist, I've met with a lot of their chaplains, particularly down in Texas, have a great group, and just some awesome work they're doing. FEMA has Voluntary Agency Liaisons, VALs. So everybody has an acronym in government. What they do is they're in each region, and I'll go back to DHS, Protective Security Advisors as well, but they're in each region of the country, and the regional office, they have people that are there to coordinate with faith-based and non-governmental organizations. And they're really focused more on FEMA stuff, disaster, but if you'll look, if you haven't really followed it well, the post-Katrina legislation put a lot of those DHS functions of preparedness, not just response and recovery, the preparedness functions are now back in or into FEMA. And so FEMA is under DHS as an umbrella. But a lot of those functions are there. And they work with individual assistance programs to help people if they lost their home, for instance, or need help there. FEMA Citizen Corps is a preparedness organization in just about every county or every area of the country. The emergency, you can contact your local emergency manager and find out if there's a Citizen Corps organization, which often encourages faith-based and NGOs to be a part of that. And so if you're a key organization in that area, you may want to have a representative on the Citizen Corps. I'll mention protective security advisors. We're talking about protection and security, and they are within DHS's infrastructure protection division. And in the past, as I mentioned, synagogues, they worked with a lot of synagogues and Jewish organizations because they've had the experience. Of course, back in Israel, they have a lot of really, really amazing situations in security. And so they, in their organizations, they've had a lot of threats. And so they've worked with them in the past. Well, now that churches and mega churches are coming on board with this security thing and thinking about, and not just mega churches, but all churches, thinking about security, that may be a group that you want to contact your local Homeland Security region, and you can look that those up online and find your protective security advisor and get to know them. So I've encouraged them, and when I was working with DHS, I met with the head of the PSAs and encouraged them to work with these faith-based groups, and he really saw the value in that. We talked about it a lot, and so I think you'll find them to have a good listening ear. Community emergency response team, is there CERT training that you can get? Usually your fire department, has anybody gotten CERT? Anybody CERT trained? I mean, people have done fire and EMS know about particularly, but if you're CERT trained, you can be able to handle those situations from an emergency perspective on those. And I would encourage a lot of your congregation, your leadership, to get CERT trained as well. So there's so many things you can look at. As chaplains, there's working with the military, NORTHCOM, Northern Command, is working now with NGOs and faith-based groups. They have people on their staff in Colorado Springs, to work with NGOs. And I did a couple of conferences with them when I was there, and they are really on board with the idea. So encourage you to work with them if you have military bases in your area particularly. The VOADS is a local organization and a national organization, National VOAD, Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. So if you, I know there's a lot of acronyms, so just put the acronym down. You can Google it and you'll find them. But they have organization in your local area, and what they do is they're prepared to respond to some sort of emergency and disaster, and it's for exchanging those business cards before the disaster occurred. So being ready with a number of people, citizens in your community, who are normally voluntary organizations, people who provide volunteers and nonprofits and other faith-based groups. And I work with the Fairfax County there in Virginia, and their VOAD as well, are part of our ministry in our church, sits on their board. And also I mentioned private and corporate sector security specialists. As many of you know, they have done this, been there, done that, for a while, many of them, especially the larger corporations, and they have knowledge to share. So if you get to know people in corporations, you say, you know, who's your kind of emergency manager person, your security specialist, who can I, you know, have lunch with or coffee with and learn from, because I think that we could develop a good partnership. They have some great knowledge to share. Some partners here, Christian Security Network, Jeff Hawkins is, many of you have met and sat on his session. He's part of ACES, and they have a group now where they are working with faith-based organizations and planning for scenarios and work internationally. Jeff can tell you about that more. Secure Community Network is a Jewish organization in New York. And so Paul Goldenberg is a partner that we worked with in the DHS, and they have developed a very sophisticated network within synagogues, Jewish community centers, and also, they are aware of threats. They have great software. They use internet stuff, and it's very sophisticated. And they have an ops room, operations control room kind of thing. I've gone and visit in New York, and so they have some great things to share. IXAR, Michael Boutat is here. Where are you, Michael? There you are. And there's Jeff, a couple, you know, from him there. You saw Michael at lunch yesterday. IXAR, working with church security and risk management, has some training he can offer as well. Some resources there, and look at his website, Christian Emergency Network, lady named Mary Marr, and she works mainly with disaster preparedness, but she has delved in this church security arena the last couple of years, very sweet lady, and so you may want to look up there. They have some good resources online. Security Church, Brian mentioned that earlier. Kudos to Brian for developing a great website, and I'm getting those, if you just sign up on there, you get those little daily I guess, can you do it on Twitter too? Or working on that. I was just wondering. But it's almost like that because you get this immediate, message with what's happening that day, and I think it's really, really good. NDIN was mentioned. I'm on their board, and they are a national organization. The COOP Comp. Now, does anybody know what COOP? Anybody tell you the acronym of COOP? Yeah. Yeah, Continuity of Operations Planning. And then COMP is something that a guy named Lewis Saylor, and he's a friend. He's in Fairfax County, Virginia there. So he does it locally, but I thought you may want to just look at his website, find out about him. He has developed a new thing called COMP, and that's Continuity of Ministry Planning. So we have to have our neat little acronyms in the church as well. And so COOP COMP, and he has developed some training that's actually been funded in part, and it's interfaith. So, you know, he had a training. He had, and he's a Christian, but he had an imam come from the mosque. He had the priests and the rabbis and all up and down the map there. And I think he's developed some really neat things there in the county. Halo Corporation is an organization that does security training, a private sector group, a friend of mine named Brad Barker, and I've just been really impressed with some of the organizations he's been able to partner with. And he has some great things to offer. So I'll be glad to provide this as a, you know, I don't know if you'll send emails out later or whatever, but it can be provided for you. I'll just mention, you can look this up, but as you look down this list of courses, EMI, Emergency Management Institute, which is part of FEMA, provides all these free training courses. And so if you're interested in hazardous materials, for instance, and you want your folks in your security team, you want somebody to develop expertise on that, or you want to do that, then go to this website, training.fema.gov, and you can find all of these free courses. I know we had some that we encourage people to take that are just basic on the National Response Framework, the Incident Management System, and all these things talking about disaster relief. But then there's a lot of security resources, all hazards, preparation, and so forth, op centers, exercise design and evaluation. So exercise, that's important. There are grants, and I don't have time to go into detail, but there are Homeland Security grants. There are legal issues related to that, and I'll just say that you need to be well prepared when you go into accepting government money as a faith-based organization. But there are ways that you can do it. You can separate out your accounting. It's a little tricky, but you have, if you have a, for instance, a training that you provide at your church, and this is going through the courts on some issues. If you have a cross on your wall, for instance, you're able to keep that up. You know, they can't come in and take you, take off down all the religious stuff on the wall or whatever symbols. But you have to keep it, you know, pretty secular in that training. But you can provide other things outside of that, you can say, you know, a different time or place. Location, as long as you give them an opportunity to do it on a voluntary basis. You say, we're going to have this prayer meeting next door, or we're going to talk about some other things about our church next door at 1 o'clock, and you're welcome to come or whatever, and as long as nothing is compulsory. So that's really the basics. I'm giving you all these legal things in a very basic nutshell, but that's something to consider. And then but they do have funds for preparedness. They're pretty limited, but, well, $1.8 billion, but that goes across the whole country, so it really kind of trickles on down. There's a grant under that called the Nonprofit Security Grant Program. And there have actually been some faith-based organizations that have gone and applied for those monies and have gotten some of it and for doing certain types of trainings. And if I understand you need to consider, weigh all those options, but I just wanted to throw it out there. So these are some of the programs that are mentioned: Urban Area Security Initiative, Medical Response System Program, Metropolitan Areas, Citizen Corps, as I mentioned earlier, they have some grants, and the Nonprofit Security Grant is something you'll want to take a look at. So I mentioned some of the legal issues there. So the guiding principle is compassionate care on the same footing as non-religious group groups, and it seems like an oxymoron to us, but it's developed this level playing field within constitutional guidelines. And so those always, you know, could change a little bit based on Supreme Court and so forth, and it takes a lot of time to develop those, you know, the case law, but it's something that there is some guidance on there, and I've got more that I can share with you. You know, email you or just let me know or whatever. It's just kind of close with showing some of the opportunities I had to be out in the field and in disasters and working with people. That's you guys from California. I was trying to think of this yesterday. The Intermountain Fire and Rescue. Met with them. They're in the middle of like the middle of nowhere, but they had lots of fires out there. If you guys know where that is, and I tell you, a lot of people had their homes just completely destroyed. And this is a church that we attended. Actually, went on Sunday morning. After it burned down, they had it at the Arts Center down the street. They had a church service, Malibu Presbyterian. It was really neat to see the spirit of those people, the resilience and the faith that God had given them. It was amazing. So North San Diego County, that's a local assistance center. Southern Baptist, had to throw that in. But those yellow shirts are everywhere. And so I did want to just close and say that you guys are on the front line. It's so important what you do, and it's appreciated. And a lot of times you think, well, it's kind of a thankless job, and sometimes you're in plain clothes, or you're not in the uniform. People don't notice you. Sometimes you're in the uniform, and then you get blamed. So it's really something that is really appreciated by a lot of people. If they don't tell you that, they need to. But I will say that what you do and what you're planning to do, and especially we heard a lot of people raise their hand yesterday with churches where they're just starting to think about this, and I really encourage you to get these resources and to talk to people who have done it and to just learn from each other, because by working together you can find so much synergy there. So where do we go from here? I'll give you the four P's and then we'll be done, because in a Baptist setting, and I grew up Southern Baptist, so you know the preachers have to give three or four points, right? And sometimes there's an acronym, sometimes there's alliteration with it. We had three words the other day, and I can't remember what it was, but my son, my five-year-old, was saying it, and I said, go tell your mom that's alliteration, because she's an author. She would really appreciate that. So he goes, Mom, that's alliteration. No. And she just laughed. It was great for him to learn that word. Well, four P's, plan, partner, pool resources, and last but not least, pray. So plan ahead, and you could even throw in prepare, another P with that one. Partner with other organizations, federal, state, local officials, law enforcement, fire, EMS, some groups mentioned earlier. Pool your limited resources that we have with other like-minded people who are doing the same thing. Some may be sitting right next to you. And pray, first, that God will protect your flock. Second, if calamity occurs, then you and your team will have wisdom, presence of mind, to work quickly under pressure, help people in need, and help save lives.